Trauma isn't what happens to us. It's how our bodies respond when experiences overwhelm our nervous system. When faced with overwhelming situations, our emergency coping mechanisms activate to save our lives. These survival responses, freezing, fighting, fleeing, or dissociating, are designed to protect us. While these mechanisms typically toggle off quickly, sometimes they remain activated, creating a persistent feedback loop where our nervous system perceives constant danger even when the threat has passed. Society perpetuates a harmful narrative that continued suffering indicates weakness or character flaws. This shame compounds trauma's effects by teaching people to avoid or deny their experiences rather than developing effective coping strategies. Many survivors internalize messages like, "get over it," or "time heals all wounds," which leads to isolation and self-blame. The truth? Trauma responses aren't signs of weakness. They're evidence of our innate drive to survive. Think of it like a broken bone. It's not a sign of weakness, but rather the body's appropriate response to excessive force. Your nervous system is doing exactly what it evolved to do: protect you at all costs. Modern neuroscience confirms this through brain imaging technology, showing how overwhelming experiences physically mark our nervous system, creating measurable changes in brain structure and function. Your trauma response is like an immune system that continues fighting after the threat has passed. Not broken, just stuck in protection mode. Moral injury occurs when an experience shatters our fundamental understanding of life. It's a profound wound that forces us to confront life's vulnerability and the fragility of our belief systems. Consider Malcolm, a combat veteran who claims he's fine while clearly struggling. His trauma forced him to face what most avoid: the inherent insecurity of human existence and the brittleness of moral frameworks. Moral injury stems from perceived personal failures or when trusted systems collapse, creating trauma's core wound. When our assumptions about life crumble, from daily patterns to deeper beliefs, we're left unmoored. Beyond self-blame and trust issues lies a deeper pain: humiliation. Many cling to self-blame because it feels safer than accepting complete vulnerability. The path forward isn't about reconstructing old beliefs, but creating new ones. As Malcolm discovered through jiu-jitsu, life's lack of inherent meaning becomes an opportunity to build something more resilient. Why can a particular song, smell, or place suddenly transport you back to a traumatic moment? This isn't a character flaw, it's neurobiology. Traumatic memories aren't memories. They're instances of unwilling reliving, forcing us to occupy past and present simultaneously. Consider Gabe, whose implanted defibrillator became his trauma trigger, making his life unlivable through his own heartbeat. Our brains process everyday events with coherent narratives and meaning tags, but during trauma, the brain's recording changes. When the amygdala detects threat, stress hormones prioritize survival over memory encoding. The hippocampus partially shuts down, creating fragmented memories, sounds, colors, smells that remain disorganized but deeply imprinted. This explains why triggers often seem random. A quality of light, tone of voice, or body sensation can activate these fragments, launching your nervous system into alert mode. Healing means transforming these fragments into organized narratives. When we retell traumatic stories with structure, our brains recognize them as completed events rather than ongoing threats. The goal isn't to forget, but to reshape our relationship with the memory. Anxiety manifests physically through sensations like tight chest, churning stomach, and shallow breathing as your nervous system maps experiences onto your body. David Morris notes that trauma reveals both our true vulnerability and creates a false belief in the need for constant hypervigilance. Bottom-up regulation uses the body to calm the brain by shifting from sympathetic, activation, to parasympathetic, relaxation states. This shift is crucial since prolonged activation leads to chronic stress. The vagus nerve, activated through throat and abdomen, triggers these calming responses. Key practices include diaphragmatic breathing, 4-7-8 breathing, box breathing, grounding exercises, body scans, mindful movement, cold water exposure activates the mammalian diving reflex. During the pandemic, activities like coloring, embroidery, and baking naturally regulated overwhelmed nervous systems by engaging the prefrontal cortex and redirecting blood flow from the alarm system. Why do some minor events leave lasting psychological wounds while objectively worse experiences don't? Grace, a first responder, developed PTSD symptoms not from disaster work, but from a seemingly minor breakup. EMDR developer Francine Shapiro's concept of small T traumatic events validates experiences outside clinical definitions that produce similar neurobiological effects. This reveals a fundamental flaw, defining trauma by event type rather than individual experience. The amygdala doesn't distinguish between big and small traumas. It's like asking a smoke alarm to differentiate bacon smoke from a house fire. The DSM-5's limited definition, recognizing only actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violence, affects treatment approaches and prevents proper diagnosis for many sufferers. What matters is how your nervous system processes an event, not its objective severity, whether it was overwhelming, whether you had support, and if you could integrate it into your worldview. Have you ever found yourself drawn to harmful relationships despite knowing better? Trauma bonds act as powerful magnets, pulling people together despite damage. These bonds form through exploitative power dynamics and intermittent abuse mixed with affection. The cycle of abuse, alternating with reconciliation, triggers pleasurable neurochemicals, making these relationships addictive. The dominant partner's worth inflates while the subjected partner's diminishes. Freud noted this tendency to repeat trauma rather than avoid it, a force he called demonic. People replicate painful patterns to master overwhelming experiences, avoid painful truths, or because abuse feels familiar. Trauma can also impair self-awareness. Recovery requires understanding brain circuitry, where fear and hope circuits counterbalance each other. By consciously activating hope through our thoughts, we can reduce fear responses and restore agency. Just as thinking about a lemon makes your mouth water, focusing on possibility shifts us from helplessness to hope. Who are you beyond your trauma? This question lies at the heart of healing. Trauma doesn't just create symptoms, it alters how we see ourselves. Lily, facing terminal cancer, processes her childhood trauma of hiding from her tyrannical father. Though she planned defiance, she automatically submitted when he arrived, showing how survival often meant surrendering identity. Muhammad Ali's rope-a-dope strategy against George Foreman demonstrates reclaiming power, absorbing blows while conserving energy, then striking when his opponent tired. Similarly, trauma recovery allows us to reclaim power even if we couldn't fight initially. We lose ourselves when defined by others' labels, whether perfect or unacceptable. These labels and unintegrated trauma can convince us they're our entire identity. The 100 Other Things exercise breaks this pattern. List your negative labels and their impact, then write 100 other things about yourself. This broader view helps release limiting beliefs. Your trauma response wasn't wrong, it was survival. Now you can honor that protection while reclaiming your authentic self.